The BBC presents My Word. And here to introduce the program and the panel is Jack Longman.
My Word is a word game played by people whose business is words, and the two teams are Arnott Robertson and Frank Muir on the one side, and Nancy Spain and Dennis Norton on the other. And round one is a test of their vocabulary. They get 2 marks if they get the meanings of these particular words right or approximately right. And we begin with Arnott Robertson. Arnott, what is borscht? B-O-R-S-C-H, borscht.
It's a very peculiar soup in which I think a beetroot has died.
I personally
don't like it, as
where
you
would
gather.
You expect to find that particular?
Where would I expect to find the dead?
Not the dead beetroot, but the soup.
Oh, Hungary, Russia.
Yes, that's right. It's a highly seasoned Russian soup, beetroot included. And it looks rather like a dead beetroot, as Arnold quite rightly said. Dennis Norton, this is much harder. What is a Celt? K-E-L-T.
Okay, yes, I know that. It's a sort of highly exhausted salmon.
Yes, absolutely.
Wait a minute. After a salmon has swum upriver to spawn, it spawns, and then it makes its way downriver very slowly, wondering if all those waterfalls were worth it. it's a salmon sort of going back home.
Yes. Well, if I could give you 3 marks, I would. That was a brilliant description. 2 marks. It could be a sea trout as well. After spawning, spent fish. Nancy Spade, what's the meaning of the word apodictic or apodictic? A-P-O-D-I-C-T-I-C, or it could be D-E-I-C-T-I-C. Apodictic, apodictic.
Apodictic. I suppose it's something about speaking.
Yes.
And apo...
it's a fin.
It is. Dictic. Dictic is a clock. APO is a post office. It's a post office clock.
It goes pick up.
Oh, yeah. No marks so far.
There's something to do with speaking.
Well, yes, I think you would normally have to speak it or write it. It means something which is clearly and quite incontestably demonstrated to be true.
Sorry. A quid.
All right, Frank, I've got quite a nasty one for you.
I don't care.
The meaning of the word excoriate.
Oh,
E-X-C-O-R-I-A-T-E. Excoriate.
Excoriate. Well, let's break it down. X is algebraic for 10, as we know from the existentialists. Car is French for body. E-8 is the London postal area for Hackney. So we have 10 French bodies in Hackney. It's a French strip review playing at the old Hackney Empire, Jack.
If you will stick to the body and the strip, you're getting a great deal nearer the truth.
Well, there's a piece of rather illiterate writing which has been passed by my lady partner, which says, scar.
Yes?
Yes, right, 1 mark. Let us proceed no further with this charade.
Well, if you say scar, I'll give you 1 out of 2.
Well, I'll settle for that quite happily.
It means to strip part of the skin from or to peel off. For instance, when you fall down and you lose a bit of skin, that bit that you've lost is excoriated.
I've excoriated my thumb.
So you have. And before we begin the second round, I give each team a quotation that I want them to write down, and then the 2 women members of the team study them during the rest of the program, we hope, and at the end, I ask them where the quotations come from. Now, Arnott Robertson with Frank Muir, your quotation is, a rose by any other name would smell as sweet, and Nancy Spain with Dennis listening in, the lowing herd winds slowly o'er the lea. And then at the end of the program, I ask Frank and Dennis to give me their particular and rather peculiar ideas of how these words came to be written. And I don't want the answers now. And so to round 2, which is again a kind of test of vocabulary, but this time it's a bit inside out. That is, I give the team members the definition in the dictionary. I want them to give me the word. 2 marks if they get it right. Aunt Robinson, here's yours. A kind of woman's or child's blouse, originally of bright red, but also a biscuit containing currants.
Oh, they were dead flies.
Yes, that's what we call them, dead flies.
I was brought up to believe they were dead flies. Biscuits with dead flies in them, a Garibaldi biscuit.
That's right.
That's it. I never heard of that.
Garibaldi. Which is a kind of biscuit, but it originally derives from the red shirts worn by the followers of Garibaldi, the Italian patriot, who really did march on Rome, and not in a bogus way like Mussolini tried to do. Dennis Norden, yours is, as a definition, introduced beneath the skin.
Well, that's two complete strangers playing in a pantomime horse. introduced beneath the skin. Subcutaneous, yes. That's a good word.
Or intravenous?
Subcutaneous.
Well, I'm going to pass on subcutaneous. It's the alternative. The other one is hypodermic, which is usually used, quite wrongly, as the syringe that does the job below the skin. But either of those, hypodermic is the Greek and subcutaneous is the Latin. 2 marks, I guess, fair. All right, Nancy Spade, this is yours. Hatred of marriage.
Husband.
Yeah. We're getting there, but not the first bit was wrong.
Misogamy.
Yes. Misogamy it is. Hatred of marriage, well, whereas misogyny is
wardrobe.
Hatred
on.
Of women, which is quite different. Frank, your turn. An unbranded calf or yearling, and by derivation a mastless person, a rover, a stray.
Unbranded, presumably American.
Yes.
Unbranded. I always buy branded goods, actually. I'm not very familiar with the unbranded ones. I know the answer to this one. I don't know.
Sorry about that. You don't get any marks for not knowing. It's called a maverick. And there was a Texan. He's an engineer and a cattle raiser who absolutely refused to brand his cattle. And they were called mavericks as the result. Well, in the next round, this becomes very literary at this point. I give each member of the team a quotation and ask them to try and complete it. And they can get 2 marks for completing it correctly and 2 more for saying where it comes from. We begin with Aunt Robertson. 1,000 hearts beat happily, and when music arose with its voluptuous swell...
It doesn't ring any bell at all.
Never mind. It's Byron, Childe Harold, the Eve of Waterloo. This is the great ball they held, I think in Brussels, wasn't it? The night before the battle.
I'll tell you who gave the ball. It was the Duchess of Richmond. 1 mark.
And it was in the laundry.
Too late for any marks at all.
It was in a laundry, which is another mark.
Well, that's to complete it. I've got to get it right, I suppose. 1,000 hearts beat happily, and when music arose with its voluptuous swell, soft eyes looked love to eyes which spake again, and all went merry as a marriage bell, but hush, hark, a deep sound strikes like a rising knell. That was cannons in the distance. Byron, Eve of Waterloo. Dennis Norden. Men, some to business, some to pleasure take, but every woman is at heart a rake.
Hear, hear.
No editorialising yet. Oh, I don't know.
Pope.
Yes, I think so. Yes. Is it Pope?
Yes, quite right.
Pope. Essay on men. Man.
Well, change the sex a little, I'll give it to you.
Women.
You can't change the sex much, it's either women or...
It's about women, anyway.
Yes, Pope on women. You wouldn't presume to complete the quotation then, Dennis?
No, I think I'm darn lucky to have got that far.
It's one of Pope's moral essays of the characters of women, and this is how it goes. Men, some to business, some to pleasure take, but every woman is at heart a rake. Men, some to quiet, some to public strife, but every lady would be queen for life, yet mark the fate of a whole sex of queens, power all their end, but beauty all the means. And he goes on like that really rather unkindly for a long, long, long time. And Nancy Spare, yours is, I think, not so hard. And how can man die better than facing fearful odds?
Macaulay, the Lays of Ancient Rome.
Yes.
In the something of his fathers and the whatnot of his gods.
The
ashes of his fathers and the temple of his gods.
Yes, fair enough. And who was speaking?
Horatius.
Yes. It's the stanza that began, then out spoke brave Horatius, the captain of the gate. 4 marks for that. Frank Muir, and this could be more than spoken. Early one morning, just as the sun was rising,
I heard a male singing in the valley below. Oh, never leave me. Oh, don't deceive me. How could you use a poor maiden's soul?
Yes. Yes, cries of author. Yes.
Algernon Non.
Yes.
A Non.
Traditional or anonymous, early one morning. Well done, Frank. 4 marks. Well, the next round is a test of recognition of style. I'm going to read some short passages of prose, and from the style or the content, I want the members of the team to tell me who wrote them. 2 marks if they get it right. We begin with Arnott Robertson again, and I apologize because I haven't got the accent. Someday, somewhere, a guy is going to come to you and show you a nice, brand-new deck of cards on which the seal is never broken, and this guy is going to bet you that the Jack of Spades will jump out of this deck and squirt cider in your ear. But, son, do not bet him, for as sure as you do, you're going to get an ear full of cider.
I should think it's Mark Twain.
No.
Damon Runyon.
Yes. Yes. Now, Dennis Norton, yours is a bit different. Notwithstanding these admonitions, she did eat 16 quarters, 2 bushels, 3 pecks, and a pipkin full. What a filthy deal of loblolly was here to swell and womble in her guts. After dinner, they all went tag-rag together to the willow grove, where on the green grass, to the sound of merry flutes and pleasant bagpipes, they danced so gallantly that it was a sweet and heavenly sport to see them so frolic.
Sounds like Pantangro.
It does. It's not Noddy, is it?
No.
Is it Rabelais?
Yes. Well done. Jolly good. It's Rabelais from the Book of Gargantua. It's the enormous tripe supper that was eaten immediately before the rather surprising birth of Gargantua. 2 marks. Nancy Spann, thinking deeply, if you will. It's not given to us all to become famous, but in this busy world there are few who, metaphorically speaking, need waste their sweetness on the desert air, or, in less poetic language, lead a useless life. Specially does this apply to women, who, though perhaps less gifted with brain power than the sterner sex, have yet a greater versatility of talent, and who, if they seek it, can always find a vocation.
Must be Mrs. Beaton.
Then. It is Mrs. Beaton.
The Book of Household Management.
Absolutely right. It's Mrs. Beaton's cookery book, the opening remarks of the first chapter called The Housekeeper, and Nancy's great-great-aunt?
Great-aunt.
Great-aunt, sorry. Now, back to Frank Muir. The English have no respect for their language and will not teach their children to speak it. It is impossible for an Englishman to open his mouth without making some other Englishman despise him.
Why can't the English?
Yes.
This is George Bernard Shaw.
Yes.
In Pygmalion.
Yes, preface to Pygmalion by George Bernard Shaw, not Pygmalion likely, that's the one. Well done. And that brings us on to another round about characters and the books they come from. 2 marks, one for saying who they are, one for saying where they come from. Arnott Robertson, Betsy Trotwood.
Well, Betsy Trotwood, she's Dickens.
Yes.
She's either she's Oliver Twist or
Copperfield. Yes. Not Oliver Twist, because I saw it recently. Not in that.
David Copperfield.
Settling for David Copperfield. Quite right. 2 marks. The old woman with a soft heart and a sharp tongue who looked after David Copperfield himself.
Played by Edna May.
Edna May Oliver. Dennis Norton, Justice Shallow.
Shakespeare.
Yes.
What was it?
Nimrod of that.
Is it the Merry Wives of Windsor?
Yes, quite right. And in one of the others, but that'll do. He is a rather absurd country justice or magistrate in the Merry Wives of Windsor and in Henry IV, Part 2. Nancy Spann, Peter Jackson.
cigar merchant.
Yes,
by Gilbert Franco.
Yes. Hero of Gilbert Franco's novel, Peter Jackson's Cigar Merchant. And Franco, Dr. Petrie.
Dr. Petrie was the man against whom Dr. Fu Manchu stubbed his toes. Dr. Petrie and Nayland Smith.
Fair enough. And author?
Who foiled his both Sax Rohmer.
Sax Rohmer's novel about Dr. Fu Manchu. This was the chap who was always being kidnapped by Dr. Fu Manchu, together with his old chum, Nayland Smith. Well done. And that brings us to the last round, and we go back to the quotations, which I gave the teams earlier in the program, and beginning with Arnott Robertson for 2 marks, can you give me the origin of your particular quotation, if you remember it well? A rose by any other name would smell as sweet.
It's Juliet in Romeo and Juliet Shakespeare.
Quite right, it's that long one, wherefore art thou Romeo?
Romeo.
Well done, 2 marks. Well now, Nancy Spain, the origin of your quotation, which was, the lowing herd winds slowly o'er the lea.
It's by T. Gray, and it's the elegy in the country churchyard.
It's the first stanza of Gray's elegy in a country churchyard. Well, now I go back to Franklin and Dennis Norton and ask them to tell me their explanation of how these quotations really came into being. And on this occasion, I want you to help, because the marks will go to whichever unlikely explanation receives the larger amount of applause from you here in the studio. And so, Frank Muir first, what really happened with a rose by any other name would smell as sweet.
For the next 45 minutes or so, I want to talk to you about a truly British musical comedy. This I have written. My musical comedy is called A Rose. We open in Covent Garden early one morning, Covent Garden Market. There is a little girl, a rather sweet little girl, at a little flower stall. And her name is, it's just a name I've dreamt up, it's Eliza Doolittle. And she's there with her friend Connie Pickering. And they're sitting there rather cold amongst their flowers, and on walks a young, if you can believe me, a young professor of phonetics. And his name is Professor Higgins. And he's very lonely and very sad, and he goes over to their stall, and he picks up a rose and said, I'd rather like to buy this, if I may. And he put it in his buttonhole, and he wanders away. And Eliza says, give me him for 6 months, and let me teach him to talk as we do. And I could transform his old life. I'll make him an happy man. And Miss Pickering says, oh, well, if you think so. So they call him over, and they say, you're lonely, love. He says, well, I am Martha, actually, yes. And Miss Pickering said, well, I'll tell you what, if you put yourself in our hands, we'll get you with it. And you'll be one of us, you know, you can have fun. He said, it's most frightfully decent of you, because I'm rather lonely. So they take him back to their lodgings, and they work at him. And then you get this big scene, which is the end of the first half, which I think is going to be theatrically dynamite, where they train him, and they say, come on now, Hammersmith, Arrow, and Hampstead Heath. He goes, Hammersmith, Arrow, and Hampstead Heath. They say, no, you're not with it, dear. Hammersmith, Arrow, and Hampstead Heath. And then eventually, at this great moment, he suddenly gets it, and he goes, Hammersmith, Arrow, and Hampstead Heath. And she says, he's got it! He's got it! By Jove, I think he's got it! And that goes into a cha-cha routine and everything. And that's the end of the curtain on this great sort of joy. And the second act, the stage is now reset, and it's really rather lovely. The setting is the West Ham Greyhound race track. And all these kids are with it, are all there, you see, and all hanging on the rails, and all shout, go on, number four, get going there. And suddenly he forgets all his training, and he suddenly shouts, hurry, hurry, you splendid quadruped! You can imagine the shock of this. I mean, the whole of the West Ham Stadium turns round on him, appalled. And then I change scene again. This is my last scene. And we're back at Covent Garden. And Eliza Doolittle is back at her stall. And Professor Higgins comes in again. And he takes this now rather sordid rose, very dead, from his buttonhole. And he says, excuse me, love, but I didn't pay for the rose. And she doesn't look round, she doesn't turn with her back to him. She just says, put the money in the till, dear. And on that note of hope for the both of them, the curtain falls. You see, now that is my musical comedy, my completely original musical, which I feel, you know, a terrific thing. I call it A Rose. I don't use my own name. I use my pen name, which is Neem. Eddie Arthur, I call, not Frank Herbert Muir, but Eddie Arthur Neem. And I'm hoping that some theatrical managers who are listening tonight will buy my play. Gentlemen, if you're listening, consider the great money-making musical comedies as Oklahoma by Rodgers and Hammerstein, South Pacific by Rodgers and Hammerstein, My Fair Lady, I haven't seen it actually, but by Lerner and Lowe. All these shows have about them the sweet smell of success. And in conclusion, gentlemen, I say, put on my play, and A Rose by Eddie Arthur Neem will smell as sweet.
Well, the angry shade of George Bernard Shaw is grumbling wherever it happens to be. And we pass on to Dennis Norden. And if you remember, his quotation was, the lowing herd winds slowly o'er the lea.
From Gray's Elegy. Actually, the lowing herd winds slowly o'er the lea is tattooed on my thigh. This came about in rather an odd way. I think anything tattooed on your thigh comes about in rather an odd way. I was given for Christmas this tattoo voucher. It's a voucher for tattooing to the value of 4.9 at this chap in the East India Dock Road. I went along there to this tattooist, Handsome Harry Hargreaves, Professor Hargreaves, actually, his name was. Very nice man. Quite a well-known tattooist. He has designs on very many well-known ladies that you may know. And he greeted me warmly, took the voucher, and he said, now, sir, what would you like? He said, I do a very good thing, a special thing, he said, which is a dancing girl. He says, well, I tattoo on your arm, he said, and if you flex your muscles, she sort of moves sinuous. I said, well, I don't sort of often flex my muscles. It's my job, you know, I don't, it's not sort of an outdoor job, I'm sedentary. And he said, go on, he said, you don't look a day of... I said, no. Anyway, I explained to him, you see, exactly what I did for a living, and he said, oh, of course, he said, I know, yes, he said, you're in that program, aren't you, whose word is it? So he said, I'll tell you what I'll do for you, he said, because I have this special line, he said, like, you've been in, like, the quotations business. He said, I do this line of tattooing quotations, my literary line, I call it. So I said, really? Well, what is that? He said, I have a special thing. You see, I tattoo a quotation on any part of your body and a quotation as a relevancy to that part of body. I said, well, such as? So he said, well, example. He said, and he put his hand on the left side of my chest, if you'll pardon the outspokenness. And he said, now, what do you got there? So I said, well, you're the same as everybody else, you know, three vests and an iodine locket. And he said, no, under, I said, well, my heart. He said, exactly. He said, I tattoo there a quotation. He smiled a sort of sickly smile and curled up on the floor, and the subsequent proceedings interested him no more. I said, what's that? He said, quotation. You recognise that? You and your gentleman in your position said, Bret Hart. Oh, I said, doubtfully, like. No, I said, it's a bit recherche. He said, well, I've got a better one. He said, how about having... He said, you're a London gentleman, aren't you? I said, yes. He said, how about having... Oh, Danny boy, the pipes are piped to calling. So I said, why? And he said, London, derriere, you see. And I very nearly fell for that, you see. I said, no, I wouldn't really like it. I think on my leg. Have you any quotation you could put on my leg? And he said, leave it to me, I'll surprise you. He said, let me put you up, because they do it with an anaesthetic, you know. And he gave me this anaesthetic, which is jolly good. They don't stick anything in you. It's this new type of anaesthetic. You don't have to inhale. It's called a hammer. And when I woke up, there it was, tattooed right across my thigh, the lowing herd winds slowly o'er the lea. And, you know, I never got the connection. Not until tonight, not until 3 minutes ago, because it's obvious why it should be on my leg. It's Gray's L.E.G.
Well, I think by your vote, Dennis's story gets that particular mark. And that brings us to an extremely close finish in which Nancy Spain and Dennis Norden win by half a mark from Frank Muir and Arnott Robertson. And that also brings to an end this edition of My Word.
In My Word, you heard E. Arnott Robertson, Nancy Spain, Frank Muir and Dennis Norden, introduced by Jack Longman. The program was devised by Tony Shryan and Edward J. Mason and presented by the BBC. ¶¶